alien. I hunger for their deaths. I want their blood to spill. I've been trapped, boxed, poisoned, abused, and now it's my turn. I don't fear destruction. It's a desire to survive that slows you, girl. I...
Nona wrested control back from Kiot, coughed, and added in her normal voice, "If that's all right with you." Clara, pale now, backed against the tunnel wall, her eyebrows raised and offered her palms in the "be my guest" gesture. Nona walked on alone, the ribbons of her smock loose around her, body filthy with grime and gore, her chained arms held up before her. Days of starvation had taken flesh from her bones, and she hadn't any to spare before she was captured. She put a limp into her step, and hung her head as she came into the circle of the first lantern's light.
"Ice!"
an oath from the trio in the corridor ahead of her.
"Help me,"
croaked out, too soft for them to hear, perhaps.
"It's a girl,"
the sound of swords clearing scabbards.
"One of their prisoners."
A deep voice.
"A child."
The one with a hint of sympathy.
"Chained." "Get away,"
barked at her. Harsh. Nona kept up her advance all the while. Slow. Steady.
"Help me."
"We can't help you, girl."
"Get yourself back.
There's ways out. You might find one before they catch you."
This one took a certain pleasure in her predicament. The Noiguan would not be kind to any escaped prisoner.
"Help me."
"I'm warning you, come any closer."
Nona set her fingertips to the chain and rippled her flaw blades into being.
"Help."
She lifted her head.
"Me."
In the moment while the three men registered the alien blackness of her eyes, Nona tore one arm across the other, shredding iron links beneath her blades. She scattered chain segments at the guards and sprinted the remaining 5 yards, hurling herself sideways into the air. Deep in the moment, Nona twisted to ride both above and below the sword blades reaching towards her. She hit all three men with her back to them. One arm extended to drive blades into the neck of the leftmost man, the other arm crooked to skewer the groin of the middle man, her legs tangling with the legs of the man on the right. All of them fell. Before they hit the ground, Nona had ripped her blades from the leftmost man's neck and doubled up to stab the rightmost in the head. She cut short the cries of the groin-stabbed man with a slash across his throat. Kettle and Clara ran from the shadows where corridor gave way to natural tunnel, and found Nona sitting across the three bodies, panting, blood arc spattering the sigil-scribed walls.
"I thought we were going to knock them out,"
Clara said in a small voice. Nona levered herself up, her exhaustion returning with a vengeance.
"Let's go."
Nona watched the corridor while Clara and Kettle searched the dead for keys or anything else of use. The symbols etched into the walls pulled at the corners of her vision. Which of the sigils would collapse the tunnel, Nona had no idea. But had there been even a single additional guard, it would have been hard to stop them activating one and bringing the roof down. Had there been a whole barracks full of them, it would have been impossible. Kettle distributed the throwing star she had recovered from the bodies of her earlier targets. Nona found a length of rope in the barracks room to replace her chain belt. She thrust her Noiguan sword through it and accepted 2 stars from the nun. Clara led them on, nerves showing.
"I've no idea how you talked me into this."
She flattened herself against the wall and peered around the corner before moving on towards a flight of stone stairs.
"I mean, I missed you, but I had a good thing going here. Chazal and Nord Taxis are
vicious maniacs who would fill the corridor with blood just to float themselves a little higher than their already lofty stations," Kettle finished for her.
"Well,"
Clara advanced soft-footed up the stairs.
"Yes."
She paused and advanced again.
"But very rich."
Nona brought up the rear, a throwing star in each hand.
"I like your friend,"
Kiot seemed louder in her skull than he had for some time. An understanding struck Nona, as moments of clarity sometimes do when all the parts of a problem come momentarily into some chance alignment. When I kill and rage, your grip on me grows stronger. Only a silence where Kiot should be. And when I show mercy or kindness, you're driven to the surface. Nona! Kettle beckoned her to the corner ahead. Servants! The nun reached a hand around Nona's shoulder, the other arm around Clara, sharing her weight on the pair of them rather than her injured leg. I'll hide us. Shadows rose to wrap them, and although Nona still felt visible, albeit darkly shadowed, she knew that Kettle had worked the trick of hers that would deceive any casual and untrained eye into seeing nothing, but perhaps a thickening and a flicker of the shade. She concealed them from the worry-faced servants who came and went. Of Shirzal's guards, there were few signs. Stealth is best achieved in the patient's trance. Nona had conquered the clarity trance first, and finally serenity. But she had never truly mastered patience. She tried, though, focusing on her mantra, an image of a green shoot just broken through the soil and waiting to grow. She found that being exhausted helped. With Kettle's weight on her shoulder and the shadows flowing cold around her, she found a kind of patience and schooled both her breathing and her footfalls to match the palace ambience, fitting them into the spaces provided by the moan of the wind, the distant clatter of feet or shutting of doors, the sounds that underwrote each day beneath that roof, unmarked and unheard. They paused at a second flight of stairs.
We've been incredibly lucky so far, Kettle whispered. So lucky it almost feels like a trap. We can't count on things staying this way. Whatever problem is drawing the guards off is unlikely to keep them away for long. Once I've got my hands on the Shepherd, it won't matter, Nona said. Let them come.
She could feel its power even now, and Hesse's memory promised so much more as they got closer. The arm with which Kettle held Nona to her stiffened a little, and after a pause, the nun spoke.
A Shepherd is a dangerous thing, as dangerous to the person who holds it as to anyone they aim that power at. If we're going to do this, I think I should be the one to carry it.
You can hardly walk, Nona said.
I don't know what it would do to you, Nona.
Kettle's voice was tight with conflicting concerns.
There are books at Sweet Mercy that say the Shepherd is too strong for mortals to get close to. It twists them.
She was talking about Kiot. Nona felt sure Kettle knew she carried a devil beneath her skin, and the nun didn't believe her pure enough to touch a Shepherd. It hurt to hear Kettle's doubt in her, but it was probably well-founded.
Well, we're not going to find out standing here.
Clara bumped them both back into motion. With Clara's direction and Kettle's shadow, the three of them wound their way deeper into the palace, through galleries and halls so numerous that Nona wondered who used them, and whether Shazal saw any of these grand spaces more than once a year. They crossed a small internal courtyard, like a deep sky-roofed pit in the palace, at the heart of it a lonely fountain, and came at last to a corridor where an iron gate blocked their progress.
Locked, Clara ran her hands up the scroll-worked bars. Solid.
Kettle sat, leg held stiffly to the side, fresh blood glistening amid the dried. Taking three heavy picks from her sleeve, she addressed the lock. Within seconds, the mechanism yielded, clunking as she rotated the picks together.
Done.
They helped Kettle up and went on, advancing down a long, lamp-lit corridor, passing many closed doors.
We're getting close, Nona said.
The Shepherd's presence pushed on her, filled her, set her nerves tingling, the feeling both exciting and a little terrifying.
We are. Clara shot her a look. There's a barracks room ahead and to the left. They say Yisht's quarters are around here too, but I've not seen her since that day with the barrel.
Clara bit her lip, frowning.
You know what?
I really don't want to see her again. Especially not when all I've got for protection is you two walking wounded.
She shrugged off Kettle's arm.
We really should go back. We're going to get our ship hurt.
Nona helped Kettle on alone.
Shazal's guards are scared of Yisht.
Clara's voice came from behind them now. She wasn't moving.
They say she came back, changed.
There's a reason the ship heart was kept walled up in the caves, Kettle said. Nona's mind was full of the ship heart now, close, powerful, the beat of it running through her. Not kind, not comforting, just vast and endless.
I feel it too.
Kiot's voice held a certain hunger. You do?
Like a memory. I know this thing. It's old. As old as I am.
He sounded stronger by the moment.
But the ship hearts are older than the Empire.
Nona wasn't sure how old they were, but certainly thousands of years. Enough time for nations to rise and fall, for knowledge to fail and be rebuilt.
The ship hearts brought the tribes to Abath.
Do you think so?
You don't?
Nona didn't like the smugness in the devil's voice.
Everyone knows they did.
Maybe they drew your people here. They didn't carry them.
What do you know about it? You never know the answer to anything interesting. All of a sudden you know things.
The heart is waking up my memories.
And why would it do that?
Nona kept her eyes on the doorways ahead, trying not to let Kiot distract her.
Because it's where I was born.
Nona made no reply, returning her attention to the corridor. Kiot's certainty unsettled her. There was a draw to the shipheart's presence. Perhaps the fascination that the flame holds for the moth. She felt its pull in the marrow of her bones. They advanced around another corner. From her time with Hesse, Nona knew that the shipheart had to be within 50 feet or so now. Kiot blazed across her chest and down over her abdomen. He seemed to be feeding on the shipheart's power in ways that Nona couldn't understand. His natural anger and lust to kill began to bleed out into her. Earlier she had felt his grip on her weakening and thought that one day she might be able to drive him out. Kettle must know of the devil now, having worn Nona's flesh and bones back in the Tetragode. What she might do about it was a problem for later. If there was a later. A cold shiver ran through Nona, toes to head, pulling her away from thoughts of Kiot. Something had changed. Suddenly the halls of Shirzal's palace seemed echoingly empty. Not conveniently empty, but as if Nona had turned around in a crowded market square to find that in that instant the place stood deserted with just the wind to stir the space where people should have been.
She's watching us,
Nona said, knowing it to be true, though not knowing how. She tried to reach for her own anger rather than Kiot's and found only fear. Over her shoulder she saw that Clara was backing away. The cracking of stone was their only warning. Shards of masonry broke from the wall at the margins of the area from which Yisht stepped. She emerged behind them, the stonework releasing her with reluctance, as if she were pulling free of thick mud. Clara spun around with a squeal of fear. Nona and Kettle disentangled, turning as they did, the nun hopping back on her good leg. Yisht broke clear about the same time that Clara recovered enough of her wits to hurl the throwing stars she had been given. Kettle and Nona threw theirs a fraction later, 6 in the first volley, more following. Clara had never been particularly accurate with throwing stars. Her right-hand throw at least centered on Yisht's body mass, the left angled wide of target. Lacking Hunska speed, though, the warrior should have been hit at least 5 times. She stepped through the hail of sharp metal, unharmed. Her ability to read the immediate future allowed her to begin plotting a path that would evade the stars even before her opponents had decided to throw them. Yisht had changed. She wore the same black garb, knives across her chest in a black leather harness, her tular, the flat-bladed sword favored by the ice tribes, at her hip.
She seemed to wear the same body too, though it moved in unnatural ways, as if occupied by some larger presence. The flat bones of her face cut the same angles, but her black eyes sat in a crimson sea rather than the whites she once had, and her skin had become a moving patchwork of scarlet, deep purple, black, grey, and bone white. Nona knew exactly what she was looking at.
She's full of devils.
Where Nona had one, and Raymel had returned from death's border with four, Yisht had so many that they competed for space, surging across any exposed skin. Nona could almost hear them screaming for her blood. Clara, who had been closest to the point where Yisht emerged, now passed Kettle and Nona moving fast.
I know another way out! We want the vault, not a way out!
Kettle called after her. To Nona's ear, the nun didn't sound as convinced as she had before. Nona gathered her courage, reaching for another weapon. Kettle set her back against the wall, calling on the shadows. The sword Nona drew from her rope belt felt unfamiliar in her hand. A Noiguan blade, a little shorter, straighter, and heavier than the sword Sister Tallow trained the novices with. Yisht had never been one for smiling, but she smiled now, her teeth bloody. She pulled her tular from the grip of its scabbard, along the side slit as tulars are nearly twice as broad at the end as at the hilt. By rights, she should be the one afraid, facing a sword-trained novice whose speed could leave her swinging at air. Nona held her ground, making test cuts to learn the feel of her weapon. Behind her, the darkness began to thicken and clot as Kettle focused her strength to give the knight claws. Yisht came in at a steady pace, sword before her, arm extended.
Clara!
Nona called after her departing friend. Yisht had defeated them both once before, along with a class full of other novices, but they had been children then.
Friends are a weakness, Yisht said. I taught Zol this lesson.
She attacked as she spoke, and at the first parry, Nona's sword was all but taken from her hands. The Ice Tribe's strength was incredible. Nona struck back, launching a blinding sequence of blows, moving as fast as she ever had. Yisht met each one with a perfectly placed parry. Nona tried to carry her slices over the interposed edge, but Yisht somehow twisted her blade to stop such moves, almost disarming her. A vicious swing at stomach level had Nona leaping backward, pulling in her hips and belly as the end of Yisht's tular sliced within a finger's breadth.
How can you be losing?
Kiot howled.
She knows everything I'm going to do, Nona turned a thrust from her chest. She can see the future.
She can't see the future, just what you and your friends are going to do next, because you're such primitive things. She can't predict a dice roll or see what I will do.
Well, do something then.
Nona deflected another attack, feeling the wind ripple behind Yisht's tular as it passed her face.
Don't just talk.
But she knew that talk was all Kiot had.
It's easy, Kiot said. Do something she can't stop even if she knows it's coming.
Nona fell back another step, then leapt into the moment. She swung at Yisht's head from the woman's right, and their two blades met in a jarring crash. Nona pulled her sword away, starting to rotate on a heel. She accelerated into the motion, turning her back on Yisht, relying on the lack of time to keep the woman from cutting her down. Yisht's sword was high up on her right side, still shaking with the echoes of that last parry. If Nona could spin around and cut in low from the left, there was no way Yisht could physically move her blade fast enough to interpose it. Yisht's boot heel smacked into Nona's backside as her spin turned her through the half-circle. She must have started the kick before Nona started turning, and it sent her sprawling away onto her front. Nona barely managed to avoid being skewered by the follow-up, pinned to the floor. She rolled away beneath Yisht's descending blade with an inch to spare. Kettle's shadows launched themselves at Yisht over Nona's prone body. Nona saw the Ice Tribe fall back before the mass of rending darkness, just as she had once fallen back before Nona's own avenging shadow. A moment later, the nightmare of claws and teeth fell apart, collapsing into a wash of darkness. Nona rolled just in time to see the chunk of stone and plaster that had struck Kettle fall to one side as the nun dropped bonelessly to the other. Yisht must have used her rockwork to break the lump free. Nona could see the spot where the piece had fallen from, high above Kettle where the wall joined the ceiling. But the blow was a glancing one. Kettle had sensed it at the last and managed to pull back far enough to save her skull from being smashed. Yisht came on at speed, neatly sidestepping a knife that came winging down the corridor. Nona only just got to her feet in time to meet the attack. She held her place between Kettle and the ice driver, trading blows. Although her speed kept Yisht on the defensive, each clash of swords threatened to tear Nona's from her fingers. Her arm ached, and she was tiring swiftly. Of Clara, there was no sign other than the knife.
"Kill her!"
Keot sounded desperate. The devil drove himself into Nona's right hand, strengthening her grip on the sword hilt.
"Kill her!"
"Too crowded for you inside Yisht, is it? Don't fancy sharing."
Nona fought on. To her side she caught a glimpse of Kettle starting to move, an arm lifting to her head. A groan followed. Yisht stumbled, her footing wrong after a difficult parry, one foot skidding on scattered ceiling plaster. Seeing her chance, Nona pressed the advantage, but suddenly found her sword stolen from her hand by some wrist-rolling action that went unrevealed until the result had become inevitable. Yisht surged up, her stumble a ruse, and Nona, now letting time escape only in the smallest fractions, suddenly became aware of several square feet of ceiling plaster descending upon her. The falling mass had already covered more than half the distance to the floor. Nona dived back, twisting from the thrust of Yisht's blade, turning her shoulder to the plaster as it hammered into her. She hit the ground hard in a white cloud of dust and fragments, rolled and kept rolling, knowing that a razored Tular would come scything out of the dust any moment. But none did. The air cleared to reveal Yisht, her blacks now whitened, the slow color tides across her skin pale beneath powdered plaster. She stood with one foot pressing Kettle's heads to the floorboards, the blade of her sword against the nun's pale throat. Whatever looked at Nona from her eyes did not appear to be human.
"Friends are a weakness," Yisht repeated. "You should run away now."
"But you won't."
She moved the sword a fraction, and Nona cried out. Yisht smiled, the devil's fighting over her tongue.
"You should have let me kill you back in the convent. I was different then. Not kind, but not cruel. That has changed. Now, I am cruel."
"Run away," Keot said. "The nun's doomed. In any case, she's just a burden."
"I will cut her throat on the count of three. One."
"No, run,"
Keot shrieked.
"Run, you idiot,"
his voice growing faint and thin. Nona threw herself forward, empty-handed. Yisht timed her move perfectly, lifting her sword with a spray of blood just as Nona's feet left the ground, committing her to her trajectory. The Tular came level with Nona as she reached it, ready to impale her. She lashed out with her flaw blades, her fingers scarlet where Keot had invaded them. Her blades met steel, slicing the weapon into bright tumbling sections. But Yisht had seen what would happen, and had seen the last foot of her sword deflected from Nona's chest, piercing her upper thigh instead and grating over bone. Yisht sidestepped Nona's tackle, and the girl fell to the ground beside Kettle with a scream, her leg a hot, wet agony. The remains of Yisht's Tular fell beside her, torn from the woman's grasp.
"I could leave you both to bleed to death. I doubt you'd last until Shazal's guards found you."
Yisht stepped back, beyond range if Nona had the strength to swing at her. The blood pumped from the wound in Nona's leg at an alarming rate. If she hadn't had to slaughter pigs on Sister Tallow's instructions, she would not have believed how much blood was in her, or how fast it could leave. Of course she had inflicted worse wounds on others, but in the heat of battle there was no time or desire to observe the aftermath. Direct pressure on the wound, that was the most important thing, unless something else was about to kill you more quickly, of course. Yisht had a small package in her hand.
Grey mustard. I had hoped to spend more time helping you make a slow exit from this world.
The creature didn't sound like Yisht anymore.
I hear that Lord Taxus wanted the same pleasure, but grey mustard isn't exactly a kindness.
No!
Nona didn't want to beg, but she knew what the stuff could do.
Please!
She raised her hand, as if she could somehow ward off a coming cloud of spores. And as she did so, something red left her fingers. A crimson cloud, its tendrils seeking purchase on her skin, but losing their grip one by one as though some force were sucking it from her.
No!
A moment later, Kiot lost his last connection with her, and shot away as though drawn by a bowstring, to hit Yisht square in the forehead. The Ice Triber drew in a huge breath, like the gasp made when you fall into freezing water. She dropped the grey mustard package and staggered back, still gasping, wheezing for air. All across her skin the devil taints swirled, flowing over her, converging on her head. Somehow Kiot had been sucked from or driven from Nona, or both at once, and his initiation into Yisht's crowded flesh did not appear to be a gentle one. The pain in Nona's leg demanded her attention. She pressed her fingers hard into the wound where the blood spurted with each beat of her slowing heart, and rolled, awkwardly, to see Kettle, with both hands pressed to a crimson throat, eyeing her frantically. Nona reached out to pull Kettle's robe open, exposing the tight-bound bandolier of poisons and cures. In amongst them would be staunching powder, which when applied to wounds would, along with causing excruciating pain, dramatically reduce the blood flow. Nona could see only two containers that looked as if they might hold powder, and snatched one at random. Kettle gave a slight nod. Behind them, Yisht bellowed and roared, underlining the need for haste. Nona readied the staunching agent, raised herself from the ground, and pulled one of Kettle's hands from her throat, trying not to grimace. The cut wasn't as deep as she had feared, given all the blood. Kettle must have managed to jerk her head back and lessen the damage. The nun held the middle of the slice together, pinched between finger and thumb, while Nona applied the powder. Kettle immediately went rigid, showing her teeth in agony's grimace. The wash of blood slowed, clotting darkly around the powder. Nona rolled to her side and applied the remains of it to her leg wound. It hurt less than the harm, despite her fears. She had Thurin Taxus to thank for showing her that whatever hurts she suffered in life, worse were possible.
Come,
a pained rasp from Kettle. Nona reached out for her sword, thrust it through her belt, and together they began to crawl away down the corridor. Behind them, Yisht was throwing herself around, impacting the walls, roaring, shattering masonry. With every yard they put between Yisht and themselves, Nona's fear grew that the Ice Triber's raging would summon Shazal's guards. It seemed, though, that whatever the emergency was that had drawn away those charged with the defense of the Emperor's sister, it was proving to be a big one. After 20 yards, Nona got to her feet using the wall for support and helped Kettle up. Apart from the pain and weariness, she felt a kind of emptiness, a hole where Kiot had been. She had tried so hard to be rid of the devil, especially in the early days, turning the whole of her will against him, but to no avail. And then, at her weakest, he had been ejected without conscious effort, like a sickness coughed out. The reason came to Nona as a small epiphany, only half believed. Every time she forgave, Every time she showed love or loyalty, the devil's hold on her had been weakened. Was that really all it had taken? For her to throw herself between a friend and certain death? Kettle and Nona hobbled on, leaning on each other, and as they approached the junction where another passageway intersected their own, Nona saw Clara peeking from the corner.
"Ancestors' balls! What did you do to her?"
Clara stared past them. Kettle made no reply, hurrying around the corner and out of sight of Yisht. Nona let the nun go and took a last look at Yisht before joining her. The woman was haunched on the floor, curled around whatever battle was raging through her. Her howling had subsided to terrifying groans. Nona longed to go back and kill the ice driver, to give her the end her crimes demanded. But the Shipheart lay close at hand, and time was short. She pulled back out of sight, turning to see that Kettle had crouched down against the wall, a small ceramic tub of black ointment in her hand. The nun removed some of it on the end of a thin wooden applicator, and offered it to Nona, pointing the blackened end towards her throat where she still pinched the sides of the cut together. The stuff had an acrid smell, and Nona knew it for fleshbind, a costly adhesive that stuck flesh to flesh with frightening swiftness, forming a bond that was hard to break. The price of the ingredients, along with common sense, forbade its use by any but the oldest novices in holy class. Too many girls had been glued together in compromising positions in past years to allow its use by the younger and more mischievous novices. An unfortunate side effect was that if left too long, it would permanently dye the skin black, too. Nona applied the stuff to the edges of Kettle's wound, and, steeling her stomach against the grisly business, pressed the skin together, taking care not to get glued in place. The end result proved messy, but effective. Kettle repaid the favor on Nona's leg more quickly and with far neater results. Clara hovered anxiously, taking quick glances around the corner to check on Yisht. Nona stretched her injured leg. It hurt like hell.
"Where's the vault?" she asked.
"Back there," Clara waved absently towards double doors that stood ajar at the end of the corridor. "It's a steel box big enough to fit a horse in, stuffed full of Shazal's treasures. You can't carry it, and you'll never get it open." She sounded wistful, as if the proximity and inaccessibility of such wealth were a source of great sorrow to her. Nona could feel the Shipheart. The hidden fire that had drawn her forward had now grown into something awful, too fierce to dare. Like the fire in the hearth, it was something you wanted to come close to, until suddenly you were close enough, and another step would see you burned. She lifted her hand, fighting weariness, and forced her flaw blades into being. They flickered unevenly.
"I'll get in." "Its sigil worked. I don't think you'll cut it."
Clara flinched as a particularly loud howl from Yisht shook the air.
"We have to go. I checked ahead. There's some kind of battle going on in the great halls downstairs. It's the ideal distraction."
Nona shook her head.
"We came for the Shipheart."
"No." Kettle gripped Nona's arm with surprising strength.
"No?"
Nona blinked.
"But we..."
"The Shipheart does things. If you get too close. What happened to Yisht? It's too powerful. It takes anything bad in you and gives it voice. It makes..."
"Devils?"
Nona said. Kettle nodded.
"I think you just lost something that you don't want back. How'd you fare if the Shipheart makes 6 replacements of your very own from the darkest parts of your mind, speaking with your own voice?"
"But..."
"It would take someone of extraordinary purity to carry a Shipheart unscathed. We are none of us that."
She looked down.
"I hadn't understood how quickly the effects could occur, or how bad they could be," Kettle said. "We have to go."
"Now!"
Clara shouted.
"We have to go now!"
Her loudness suddenly made Nona realize how quiet it had become. Yisht had fallen silent, and Nona doubted it was a good thing. Even so, Nona hesitated.
We came for the ship art.
Amidst the consuming aura of the thing, she felt something more. There was a bond. Something of her lay in there too. Her shadow. She understood it in that moment. The Shipheart had drawn her shadow in, whether in Yisht's defense or by its own nature.
We can't come this close and just leave.
Clara screwed up her face, locked in some inner battle. At last the words blurted from her.
Aura's here. That's what the fighting downstairs must be. They're trying to rescue the Abbess.
Nona stared at her in disbelief that she would have kept such a thing quiet. The Shipheart was just a thing, but downstairs, her friends could be dying.
Let's go.
Chapter 43 Abbess Glass. Arabella Jotza shone brighter than Abbath's sun had burned during the lives of men. A white light broke from her, like the hope that stood as a lone diamond in the ruby heavens. Abbess Glass turned away from the girl, shielding her eyes. Someone blundered into her, a perfumed woman tripping over her long gown. Glass caught her shoulders, steadying her.
Cover your eyes, dear. It will be all right.
It took Glass a few more moments to realize she held Joelle Namsos. Her grip tightened.
Joelle?
Even now she wasn't sure, her vision full of after-images.
Joelle, you can try to end this. With your skills you might make peace here. Try to change Shazal's mind towards moderation.
The girl ripped free, stumbling away. It had been a vain hope. Shazal would likely be too well warded even for Joelle. For a long minute, screams, shouts, and the thud of falling bodies filled the hall. Glass saw Thurin Taxis and his son Lano escape into the main corridor, the boy shoving older and less hale lords aside in order to reach the doors. The blinding white intensity lessened as Aura spent the power she had taken from the path. Glass watched the girl through her fingers, a white shape, as if stolen from the heat of the smith's forge, moving swiftly. She wove a path among the silhouettes of palace guards that stumbled towards her, leaving them in her wake, blind, insensible, or smoking, depending on the length of contact made between them. Each step brought her closer to Glass and the judges. Above the sounds of combat, Glass could hear Shazal shouting orders from the corridor outside the main doorway. Commands that the Jotsis girl be taken down and that nobody escape. As Aura's light dimmed, Glass began to see the rest of the room. Guests wandered, dazzled or crouched in fear, or lay groaning where they'd been trampled in the exodus. Guards continued to close on Aura, in greater numbers now they could look her way, with more arriving from the adjoining chambers. Darla had descended from the gallery, possibly by hanging and dropping from the railing. Glass watched her use some kind of heavy wind instrument to flatten a guard, then steal the woman's sword just as two more guards closed on her. Across the room, Regal and Saphira were locked in unarmed combat, their battle blisteringly fast. Having witnessed many contests between Hunskas, Glass could tell that both of them were full-bloods and extremely skilled. Perhaps Saphira had the better technique, but Regal's greater strength restored the balance. Glass suspected Saphira too proud to use her Noiguan blades or poisons. She had been proud as a novice, too proud to let Kettle go. She would want to beat this cage fighter bloody with her own hands. Aura came through a wall of five guardsmen. A flight of arrows hissed in from the doorway. Aura avoided them with motions too quick to see, one arrow spinning away, another finding the leg of a guardsman hurrying to intercept her.
Abbess!
Suddenly, Aura stood before her. surrounded in light that seemed to emanate from the air around her.
Your instructions!
She snatched another arrow from the air before Glass could speak. We had better leave, don't you think, dear? Glass looked back at the doors to the main corridor. Four archers stood abreast there, with many palace guards behind, and Shirzal somewhere in their midst. An arrow caught Brother Dimion in the neck, and he fell, twisting, gurgling in what sounded like outrage.
We can't go that way!
Aura batted an arrow to the floor, glancing around the room. Darla and a few of the Sis who had found weapons were now fighting a retreat towards the banqueting hall. The big novice felled the guardsman before her, with a blow that opened his chest, then beckoned them to follow.
Servants' entrance!
Let's go.
Glass hurried towards the melee on the far side of the chamber. She kept her head bowed, terrified that at any moment an arrow would transfix her. In all her long years, this was her first time in a battle, and it appalled her. The swiftness and the violence, the sheer noise of all that shouting, clashing metal, the injured howling, the stink of blood and death. All of it numbed the mind and reduced a person to a collection of animal fears and the basest of instincts. Aura kept pace, shielding the abbess, knocking aside any that intervened. Seldom and Agica followed, flanked by Melkir holding up a chair as an improvised shield. Glass picked her way through the detritus of the hastily abandoned room, toppled chairs and benches. Here a necklace scattering pearls from a broken string, there a silk shawl edged with gold rings, smeared crimson. A handful of guests still wandered in shock, an old lady toppling gracefully as an arrow meant for Glass or Aura took her between the shoulders. The blurred whirlwind of fists and feet that was Regal and Saphira spun nearer. Aura eyed the conflict, clearly torn between intervening and protecting Glass. If the pair came any closer, the two choices would be the same thing. Melkir took the decision from Aura, perhaps driven by thoughts of Sarah lying by the judge's bench with a slit throat, and hurled himself at Saphira's back. Somehow her foot struck him in the stomach, but his armored bulk still drove her back, and Regal took advantage, felling the woman with a punch to the face. Glass heard Saphira's cheekbone shatter and winced. Moments later, Aura had downed two of the guards that were harrying those of the Sis retreating with Darla, and made a path for retreat through the banquet doors. Glass, Regal, Seldom, Agica, and Melkir followed. An arrow caromed off Melkir's shoulder plate, another hammering into the door to Glass's left.
I'll hold them, Holy Mother!
Darla towered over the escaping clergy, a wild grin on her face, scarlet splashes across the blue taffeta gown she had been squeezed into. Regal sidestepped a guardsman's thrust and pulled a sword from the hand of a dying lordling. He swept the guard's blade up and ran him through, then took his place beside Darla, holding the doorway. Aura had hurried ahead, down the passage they proposed to escape along, to check for defenders. Four long tables ran the length of the banquet hall, leading towards a dais where the High Lords must have dined with Shirzal at the circular table. The remains of the feasting were still scattered across the tables. Candles lit the room, scores upon scores in brackets on the walls, and dozens of silver lamps were set in lines down the center of each table. Across the hall, Lord Carvan Jotsis was leading the Sis into the servants' corridor. The shuddering light gave the scene an unreal quality.
"Hurry, Abbess!"
Melkir took her arm, trying to lead her on. Glass held back for a moment. Through the doorway to the reception hall, narrowed by the partly closed doors that framed Darla and Regal, she could see the musicians' gallery. A figure in cream and saffron skirts approached the broken rail. Joelli.
"Abbess!"
Melkir at her shoulder.
"They can't hold for long!"
The crowd of guards before the entrance was growing rather than shrinking. Some had hold of the doors, heaving them back against the makeshift wedges that had been set, so that more could attack the pair, denying them passage.
"Joelli, you can end this!"
A whisper, as Melkir pulled her away. The girl would have a clear vision of Shirzal and space in which to work, even if she could get nothing past Shirzal's sigil wards. But a little doubt. It might buy them time. Up on the gallery, Joelle reached out a hand as if to steer someone's will. But her gaze turned towards the wrong doorway, her unfocused eyes seeming to find glass. The girl's fists closed, not in the delicate manipulation of threadwork, but a violent snatch. Between the widening doors, Regal suddenly leapt back, turning. A moment later he was sprinting past glass, bewildered terror on his face.
"Down on it!"
A cry from Darla, as an arrow sprung from her shoulder. She roared, sweeping her sword out and driving back four palace guards.
"Don't!"
Glass's heels dragged the floor as Melkir hauled her towards the servants' corridor. Joelle repeated her action, and this time Darla froze in mid-parry, as if suddenly distracted by some vital thought. A heartbeat later, the guard to her left drove his sword into her side. Darla had nothing but a tattered gown to armor her. She folded around the steel, cursing, now lost among her attackers. They closed in, swords rising and falling. Chapter 44 Clara led Kettle and Nona back through the palace, aiming to reach the tunnel by which they had entered not long before. They had approached the chambers where Shazal's guards crowded, but whatever battle had raged seemed to be over. The other participants fled, or corpses. Wrapped in Kettle's shadows, they saw no sign of Abyss Glass. Nona limped along behind Clara, trying not to wonder whether her friends still lived. She could still sense the Shipheart at her back. "We could have..." She tried to think what exactly they could have done. Drag the vault? Hack their way in with axes? None of it would have worked. "We're lucky that the Shipheart wasn't just resting on a table," Kettle said. "I didn't know quite how dangerous its effect on people were close up, or how fast they took hold. It would have been a price worth paying to take it from Shazal." Nona had meant to say take it back for the church, but the truth was that denying Shazal would give her the most pleasure. Kettle shook her head. "If it had turned you into a thing like Yisht, who knows what you would have done with it, or where you would have gone?" "Yisht brought it all the way here," Nona protested. "I could have held it for an hour." "I doubt that she did. Shazal would have had transport and containment waiting and ready close to the rock. The Shipheart likely warped her within an hour." "Shh!" Ahead of them, Clara raised her hand. They both limped up to join her. Voices could be heard on the stairs.
"Back to help the guards chase them down,"
a young man's voice, one of the Sis.
"You'll accompany me to my rooms and stand guard like a son should,"
an older man, familiar.
"Ishted would look after you,"
the younger man replied.
"What's Shazal going to think of us if we just scuttle off and hide? I'll make for the gates. They don't know the palace. That's where they'll go. They're not getting out. I'll bring Shazal the old woman's head." "Lano, you know I'm right. We outnumber them 50-1.
The sound of running feet followed, fading into the distance.
"Damn boy," Thurin Taxus's voice. "We'll get to the rooms and wait this out, Ishted."
"Yes, my lord."
Clara had already turned from the corner and hurried back along the hall, waving frantically at Nona and Kettle to follow. Kettle turned, but Nona remained, gripped by both a debilitating fear and by a rising anger. Just the sound of the man's voice brought back the full horror of those endless hours waiting for his return. It made her remember the unbelievable agonies from just a brief touch of the harm, and her gut-churning disgust at the tortures he planned. But the fear brought rage with it, a fire roaring out its defiance, refusing to be made small by an old man's threats. Threats issued when all the advantage was his. Nona put her weight on her injured leg, gritting her teeth against the hurt. She didn't know who this Ishtead was. He could be a deadly warrior employed as Lord Taxus's personal bodyguard. In her current state, it wouldn't take much of a fighter to take her down, and then she'd be in Thuron Taxus's clutches again. The whole nightmare that she had escaped reinstated simply because she was too proud to run. The silence where Kiot should be felt like a hole. The devil would have had advice, and she probably would have opted to do the opposite. You can only hesitate so long before choice is lost. The two men's shadows preceded them. Nona pressed herself into the corner. The unknown quantity, Ishtead, came first. A tall man, well-built, his blonde hair and square jaw reminiscent of Raymel Taxus. Nona wasted no more time. She surged up as fast as she could on her good leg and punched him at the junction of chin and neck, driving floor blades deep into his brain, ripping free in a crimson spray. Nona made to throw herself at Lord Taxus. Abused flesh can only tolerate so much. Nona's leg collapsed beneath her and she fell sprawling before her enemy. Thuron immediately began to turn to flee, drawing breath to shout for aid. Nona managed to swing her non-traitor leg to kick his trailing foot, and he toppled, face first, onto the rug that ran the length of the corridor. Nona scrambled onto Thuron's back, grabbed two handfuls of graying hair, and banged his face repeatedly into the floor with measured violence. It was an expensive rug, but not so thick that it would stop Lord Taxus feeling the floorboards below. "Unlock that door!" Nona gestured to the nearest door with her head. Kettle, who knew Nona would have returned for her, limped past and set to work with her picks. The lock surrendered in moments. "Help me drag him!" This to Clara, who had just that second popped her scarf-wrapped face around the corner. "Wait!" Nona sliced and lifted Thuron's thick jacket, winding it around his head so there would be no trail of blood.
"You're mad!"
Clara hissed, but she took a leg, and between the three of them they got the man into the room, closing the door behind them. The chamber was a spacious drawing room, perhaps for one of the many guest suites in the wing. The furniture was draped with sheets, and the place had a musty smell, as if it were not often used.
"Under here."
Nona lifted the sheet covering a table set against the wall that must be the palace's outer wall. Clara rolled Thuron into place, keeping her head averted, in case even in his dazed state he might recognize her over her scarf. She left him face down.
"Fleshbind."
Nona held her hand out to Kettle, and the nun dug into her robe. She retrieved and handed over the small tub without comment, passing across a wooden applicator a moment later. Nona knelt, put the tub to one side, and further sliced apart Thuron's jacket, a thing of gold thread and silk embroidery that must have cost more than a laborer could earn in a lifetime. She found the leather pouch containing the harm, and extracted the sigil-worked disc of iron with considerable care. Her fingers didn't want to go anywhere near it. She forced them to their task, requiring the same effort as if she had wanted to hold them to hot coals. Next, she applied the last of the fleshbind to the sigiled surface. Her mouth twisted as she contemplated the pallid skin covering the small of Lord Thuron Taxus's back. He had started to moan, returning to his senses. "A better person wouldn't do this." Part of her wanted Kiot to be there in her mind, screaming at her to act. She glanced at Kettle, finding the woman's face free of expression. "Any fair court would give the death sentence for his crimes," Kettle said at last. "It's for you to decide how." Nona remembered the Taxus, father and son, leaning over her in that Neuguin cell and pressed the harm firmly into the small of Thuron Taxus's back, holding it there as he went rigid with an agony whose measure she could not forget. She held the disc in place long enough for the flesh bind to form its bond.
"Why isn't he screaming?"
Clara whispered.
"You can't," Nona said,
It hurts too much. She moved back, lowered the sheet, and got up. Lock the door behind us. There was no knowing how long it would take before he was discovered. If they took too long, perhaps the pain would kill him, or maybe he would survive until he died of thirst. Twinges of regret and shame ran through Nona, while Kettle set to work on the lock again. But each time she thought of returning to put an end to the man, some image from the cells would rise to stop her. Done. Kettle stood from the lock. Can we leave now? Clara asked. Nona glanced back at the door, heart heavy, not feeling the release she had anticipated. No.
No!
Clara seemed on the point of mutiny. Lanotaxus said the Abbess was escaping with others. They're going to be caught at the gates. We need to go there and help them get out. Chapter 45 Abbess Glass. Arabella Jotsis leapt higher than Glass had seen anyone leap, or had imagined that they might. She had sheared away the bottom half of her skirts, but still what remained trailed behind her like fluttering plumage. Her leading foot broke the neck of a palace guardsman. Her sword skied through another's throat, and she was attacking a third before either of the first two could start to fall. While Melchior dragged Darla between the doors and clear of the melee, Ara spun amid the crowd of her foes, creating an ever-wider circle of injured opponents. Her speed couldn't last, but while it did, the results were breathtaking. Glass worked as quickly as she could, snuffing the flame from one silver table lamp, flinging it towards the doors, picking up the next, its oil sloshing within, and repeating the process. Darla, bleeding fiercely from several wounds, shook free of Melchior and hauled herself up him, trying to return to the fray. Melchior caught hold of her again, offering sharp words. Glass couldn't hear what they were, but they worked, and Darla accepted his support as they hurried towards the servant's door. Glass flung a seventh lamp before abandoning her task and setting off after Melchior. The seventh lamp was still lit. There had been no plan, no words exchanged. Ara had simply exploded from the passage and hurled herself across the room to rescue Darla. Now, planting a foot in a guard's groin and driving off, she threw herself back across the flames blossoming between the doors. She arrived at the entrance to the servant's passage, simultaneously with Glass, moments behind Melchior and Darla. Glass patted her on the back, taking the opportunity to put out a burning patch of Ara's dress. They wedged the door and moved on, Darla stumbling white-faced, the floor behind her painted by the rapid pattering of blood. Lord Carvin Jotsis seemed to have the best knowledge of Shazal's palace among the group who had escaped the banqueting hall. He led their party through the palace's underbelly, through roaringly hot kitchens, steaming laundry rooms, and past endless servants' chambers. Their group numbered a score or so, 4 Sis Lords, Jotsis, Mensis, Halsis, and Old Glossis, who appeared not yet ready to die despite having enjoyed at least 80 years in her seat. With them were various family members and additional guests, including a merchant or two, and the cage fighter, Regal. Now shame-faced over his flight from the battle at the banquet doors, he was helping Terra Mensis along. The girl had broken a wrist during the escape, though otherwise appeared astonishingly pristine. Had there been time, Glass would have explained to Regal the reason for his lost courage. But time had run out on them, and they were chasing it. Glass walked alongside Darla, trying to bind the cuts on her arms and sides with strips of cloth torn from her habit. All were too deep for dressing to be much help. The injury in Darla's side was a puncture wound, and the sword that made it must have penetrated her vitals. Glass talked all the while, hardly aware of what she said, just comforting noise. Words of praise for Darla's courage and skill. Words of comfort and of hope that she didn't feel. The words of the ancestor
mother and father to them all, who would surely gather each of them into the eternal embrace soon enough. Carvin Jotsus led them with a certainty common to those of his station,